Mock Stars Podcast. I am Menace, one of your hosts, and I'm here with Flash.
What is up?
What is up, dude? My voice cracked on that. I'm not going back. We're here. Man, we're back in it. Back in the studio. It is May 8th at the time of this recording, and gosh, we are so stoked. The energy is still high from last week. I'm still reeling.
Yeah, it was great up last week. It seems like a good conversation.
Yeah.
Definitely saw a bunch of like Reddit posts, not related specifically to our pod, but how to beat mid-range has been a hot topic right now.
Yeah, people are naming tournaments after it. Like, everyone's convinced it's mid-range hell, and so tournaments called mid-range heaven are popping up. I thought people are getting clever. They're very cheeky with it. They know the format isn't changing dramatically in the near future, and so you just gotta embrace it. And like someone said on a comment that after we posted this episode last week, get out there and play some CDH. Just get out there and play. You know, it's like we're all doing it together. So I think that's a great sentiment to have. And so that's the energy we're bringing. We're getting out there. We're trying to, just solve this Rubik's Cube of a format that exists out in front of us right now.
Isn't that the core of competitive Magic? Just figuring out how to win.
Yeah. And yeah.
It's got different variables right now. That's it.
Yes. Yeah. The variables are ever changing. But it seemed that people really enjoyed that episode. So, as proof, we now have 526 subscribers on YouTube, where you can support us by giving us a like. You can subscribe and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also find us on all major podcasting platforms. You can support the show by leaving us a 5-star review, making us look super duper cool. And you can also support us via Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead. Your name can turn Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server for $3 a month. Support the show. You can also support us at the $5 tier, the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier, or the 2-liter tier, the $10 a month tier, like Definitely Jeremy, Pool Boy Barry, UWP Quirt, and Aaron Becca. We also have Revenlift hanging out in the Mock Stars Dr. Pepper Lounge. And Revenlift, I've got great news for you. Those hats, they're going to be here on Saturday. We're super stoked to see them. I got these, like, they're super rad. They say Got Glarb, and they're in an acid wash denim hat. They're going to be so sick. So stoked. Almost as stoked as
I am. Are we going to have some of those available for sale as well? Or
Yeah, we are. So we're going to do those for 40 each. And 40 each. They're going to be super rad and super worth it. Flash, you and I, Flash and Menace, are MetaBusters. And we've been brainstorming. We're thinking about all these ways we can break the meta. You know who else was thinking about breaking the meta? It was Tyler last week. And then he went on the Discord server and he posted his deck list. And he said, meta busted. So we have his deck list here. And we're going to go through them. We're going to just pick out a couple stacks pieces that we believe can definitely alter and change the meta or bust it, so to speak, and help you post higher results. So let's dive right in. Before we even get into the deck list, I think it's valuable for us to go to EDH Top 16 and see what the meta is mostly comprised of, right? Because I didn't sort by like results. I usually sort by results. I want to see what's winning. I want to see the percentage of wins, what's converting and stuff like that. Instead, I filtered so that we could see popularity. How many, like what percentage of the meta are certain decks? And that way, when you go to the table, you can infer like what is most likely to be seen at the table, right? And so our top 8 decks are Blue Farm, Thrasios Timna, Kinnan, Rog'Sai, Sisse, Magda, Rog'Thras, Tivit. Those are the top eight most popular decks in all tournaments with a minimum of 20 entries in the last 6 months. So that's going to include everything post ban list, which is, it's crazy to think we're 6 months past the Dockside banning and Jeweled Lotus banning and all that good stuff. So yeah, it's, now we're looking at it and we can take a look and say, all right, let's roll back to Tyler's deck list and see what he has included to start battling the meta. And the first thing I see right off the bat is Karn, the Great Creator. And this is, it's always,
that makes sense to me.
I love this card. Now, it's not as good. I think we saw the price on this drop pretty significantly after the banning of, you know, Mana Crypt, Jeweled Lotus, Dockside, three cards that care very, very much about artifacts, producing them, or just being artifacts that help change and warp strategies. So Karn says for four colorless mana, you get a Planeswalker that says activated abilities of artifacts your opponent's control can't be activated. So it's a one-sided stacks piece that allows you to continue playing artifacts. One, which is probably its strongest feature. Like, there are very few stacks pieces out there that are, how do you say, you know, like they don't affect me, but they affect you.
Not asymmetrical it. Effects.
Hey, that's the word. And then you can plus one and until your next turn, up to one target non-creature artifact becomes an artifact with power and toughness equal to its converted mana cost. Or you can minus two. You may choose an artifact card you own from outside the game or in exile. Reveal that card and put it into your hand. Now, that second ability can be relevant from time to time, but for the purposes of time and effort and podcasting, that we will stop there. Karn is
lots of things. I mean, lots of things do go into exile.
Yeah.
Breach, Underworld Breach, a card we were just talking about, puts things into exile. Demonic Consultation and Tainted Pact put things into exile. I'm not even talking about like exile removal effects. These are things that exile things. Oh, there's cards that will you need to exile them from your hand in order to avoid paying a casting cost. There are potentially relevant blue artifacts that you would be exiling with Force of Will that you can now fetch.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, all very relevant. Like, and I think that just kind of goes into like the next type of stacks piece as well. Like, graveyard interaction. So if someone interacts with your graveyard or puts out a stacks piece that exiles cards from like the top of your deck, or like, I'm not saying that Ragavan is like a stacks piece or anything, but you know, we have cards like Dothi Voidwalker that say if a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, instead exile it with a void counter. And so this is one of the most powerful effects that you can have on the game, seeing as the graveyard is often considered a player's second hand. So like cards like Dothi Voidwalker that basically have Dothi Voidwalker has upside. It's one of the better cards we've seen printed that interacts with the graveyard.
You can say a lot of things about Dothi Voidwalker, but it has upside.
It has upside.
Is for sure one of them.
And the cost is 2 black mana. And gosh, I remember when this came out and I was just like, that seems cracked, right? Because you can also tap it and then choose a card that was exiled with it and play it without paying its mana cost. So it's just, it's crazy to me. It's a really awesome.
In Timna decks, it's a guaranteed connect during the attack phase.
Yeah, exactly. There's even more upside for cards like Dothi Voidwalker. Like, you know, there are also some other effects that interact with the grave in similar ways, like Rest in Peace. If you're in some sort of, like, if you're more, or if you're not in five colors, if you're in like a two color deck that includes white, Rest in Peace can be a very powerful effect for you. We also have cards that interact with the graveyard in selective ways, like Deathrite Shaman, who also pushes you forward, right? I think, what is it? People call this the one mana planeswalker, is, you know, what Deathrite Shaman is sort of, that's its tagline. You can tap it to exile a land, add a mana. You can tap it, pay a black, tap it, exile an instant or sorcery. Each opponent loses 2 life, which that is, it, this is all at instant speed too. It's unreal how valuable Deathrite Shaman can be throughout the course of the game. You can also pay a green, tap it, exile a creature, and then gain 2 life. So, or exile a creature from.
You're going to use every mode in any game that it's played, pretty much.
Yeah, it'll
like it's never Deathrite is never a bad card,
right?
And also that it has 2 different color identities is huge sometimes.
Yeah,
there's lots of green cards where you need to, you know, you need something green to exile.
Endurance.
Like black, it's not quite as relevant, but like alternate casting cost or additional casting cost in green often involves a green creature card or another green card.
Yeah, it really is just like one of those. Another piece of like upside to it, where in Commander, it could be considered a little restrictive, because there was a point in time where we had the discussion of like, should split cost cards be allowed to be played in mono colored decks? But I'm glad they never changed it. It's great that it never happened, that they didn't change that ruling. Cause yeah, it's a split card. It needs to have some sort of like restriction to access. But yeah, it continues to be one of the better cards in CDH and probably the best mana dork now. I used to say Ragavan was the best mana dork in CDH, but I think Deathrite takes the cake now. It's just the ability to interact with graveyards in a meaningful way is just too good. All right, stacks.
Yeah. I mean, again, not to hammer this too hard. Yeah. Deathrite is one of those cards that has so many versions of upside and zero versions of downside. Unless you're saying like, well, you know, it being color restricted because it's 2 colors in Commander. Well, but besides that, it is a card that is all upside and different relevant versions of upside.
Yeah, absolutely. Other cards that interact with the graveyard that are also valuable, like I particularly like Agatha's Soul Cauldron. I think that, you know, for 2 mana as an artifact that can come in, tap it, exile a card, and then have upside as well, where you can tap it, exile a creature card, and then, or exile a card if it is a creature, you put a +1/+1 counter on a creature you control, and then that creatures you control +1/+1 counters on them gain the activated abilities of cards exiled with Agatha's Soul Cauldron is incredible. I think that it's one of my favorite stacks pieces with upside. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm getting my wires crossed a little bit of what is considered stacks, because stacks are static effects that interact with the board. So maybe I'm crossing wires a little bit, but Dothy Voidwalker definitely falls into that category. Agatha's Soul Cauldron just interacts in the graveyard with in a meaningful way. I'm glad
I think you're going to run Agatha in a lot of staxy decks.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely like provides staxy strategies with some upside to be able to steal creatures from graveyards that have meaningful effects. You know, or you know, turn your creatures into dorks or whatever. The next card in this list that I think has a powerful effect, we all know Drannith. We all love Drannith, right? Drannith is one of our favorite cards of all time, right? For 1 and a white, your opponents can't cast spells from anywhere other than their hands. So, Tyler has, you know, this is a game changer for sure in Commander, seeing as this shuts off commanders. In Standard, this had no grounds. It didn't really do a whole lot. But in Commander, it does a whole hell of a lot. It does stop a few strategies. It kills Itali. It kills Rocco. It kills Food Chain. It does a lot to restrict your opponents from doing much of anything, right? If they built their strategy around their commander, I'm sorry, Dranith says no. And it's funny that Tyler, you know, like, is building this stacks deck that is built to combat the meta in its most terrifying way. But he also included down in the enchantments section, in conjunction with Dranith Magistrate, Possibility Storm. This is the first time I think I'm seeing Possibility Storm played in CDH. And it's hilarious.
And especially as a stacks piece.
Yeah.
I mean, it does prevent your opponent from playing cards and pursuing their strategies.
Yep.
Undeniably.
Yes. It for 3 and 2 red, you get an enchantment that says whenever a player casts a spell from his or her hand, that player exiles it, then exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile a card that shares a card type with it. That player may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Then they put all cards exiled with Possibility Storm on the bottom of their library in a random order. So Possibility Storm is one of those things where once it lands, if it lands, completely warps the game, because anything that you cast, there is like, well, one, that card goes away forever. And then, you get something else entirely, and it's random, you know, or whatever. It's, you know, it's RNG. The RNG gods are going to control your fate once the possibility trigger, or once the Possibility Storm trigger goes on the stack. So, I think it's great. In conjunction with Dranith, it's hilarious because it means that nobody can cast spells. It's basically I'm going to cast spells, you are not. And the game will end this way if you cannot interact with this. Or if you can't, like, the thing is that you would have to be able to interact. You know, it's funny. How do you get around it? Right? Because the thing you cast to get rid of it, or the thing you cast to interact with it, would then get exiled, and then you'd have to pray and hope. So if someone casts a spell, right, you would have to hope that the counter spell you cast rolls into a piece of artifact or piece of enchantment removal. I think that once Possibility Storm lands, the game ends. It's got to be the case, right? That's hilarious. So, another meta busting stacks piece, Possibility Storm. Welcome to the party. Now, this is where Tyler was using the soapbox to make his case. But I do believe that there are more of these types of effects now in his list than any other, and that is Rule of Law effects. And considering the deck is named To Roll Them All, and just to clarify, if you're not watching us on YouTube, To R-O-L Them All, To Rule of Law Them All. So I'm
which for people very new to the game, a Rule of Law effect is something that limits you to playing one spell or one of a certain type of spell each turn.
Yes, it's a Rule of Law. Yeah, is an enchantment printed way back in the day that just says each player may only cast one spell per turn. And the way that the game has sort of evolved and chosen the way that Wizards of the Coast has chosen to develop it is based on player experience, and the player who casts the most spells often has the most fun. So Rule of Law effects are seen as, well, a little unfun, but they are effective. And they do make you think through a lot of like how you are going to sequence your strategy, since it does, in theory, like this is another argument, but in theory, Rule of Law effects slow the game down. I'd like to argue otherwise. I think that Rule of Law effects in CDH should speed the game up. You only have one decision to make. You know what I'm saying? Like, usually in...
You also, it also preys on tap pass type of decks that, you know, or play land pass type decks that, like, are just going to sit on their decision making and do a million things on your end step.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's one
of they can't. Yeah. They can no longer do those million things.
Yeah. And one of those first of multiple millions of things that they try to do is going to have to be remove your stacks piece, remove your rule of law effect. So that's why I believe Tyler is going heavy into them here, is to stop this flash enabling meta from, you know, like sitting and praying on the clock. So he's going to pressure the clock. He's going to put creatures out that pressure life totals. That was his whole, like, that is where he wants to be right now. It's how he thinks that it's going to result in more wins. I agree. I do think that is the case. So our first effect that we're going to talk about is Aethersworn Canonist. This is one of the more underappreciated rule of law effects, I think, in all of Magic. It's one in a white, an artifact creature, human cleric, as a 2/2. Each player who has cast a non-artifact spell this turn can't cast additional non-artifact spells. So, got a bunch of artifacts?
And that gets into that asymmetricality that we talked about. That's important.
Yes, yeah. If you have a bunch of artifacts, roll through them. Roll through them, my guy. Go ahead, please. Cast them all, right? But most people...
Yeah, you built your deck to not be affected by the stacked effect. Like, you're going to have a higher proportion of artifacts, and you're not really being punished.
Yeah, from time to time, sure, you're not going to, like, RNG gods are not going to allow you to just continue to cast your whole library. But, like, Aethersworn Canonist is a great rule of law effect that usually punishes all players, you know, so and not in a bad way. This is a strategy where and this is what stacks is you are tempoing out the game in your favor. You believe that your one play per turn is more significant and more powerful than what your opponents are trying to string together over multiple turns. So that's why I love Aethersworn Canonist. I think it's great. It's far more powerful than people give it credit for. It often gets cut, and it's great in a deck like Elavir, right? We love Elavir, right? And if you can put a body out that restricts the gameplay of others, that it can also get bigger with the Elavir effect, like, beautiful. Love this. The next axe piece, rule of law effect that we're looking at is Archon of Emeria in this list. So Archon of Emeria is from Zendikar Rising. I can't remember. The Zendikar Rising. There it is. 2 and a white. It's a 2/3 flyer that each player can't cast more than one spell per turn. And then it says non-basic lands your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. So additional upside on a body that is... rather another overlooked rule of law effect, stacks piece. But that, if you can turn one this, it's one of the most satisfying things in the world, because your opponents, everyone keeps a fetch land. Everyone thinks their fetch land's safe. And Archon of Emeria says, nah. Just imagine, yeah. If you can imagine playing this on turn one and then watching your opponent play a tapped fetch land, that they are not going to, they just won't have access to mana for a couple turns. You get a free couple turns to develop your board state and your strategy. So, and that's also a one-sided effect. It's only non-basic lands your opponents control. So, additional upside as well. And then we have Eidolon of Rhetoric is here. This is literally rule of law. It is the effect just on a creature. Each player can cast more than one spell per turn. Phyrexian Censor is another one. Each player can't cast more than one non-Phyrexian spell each turn, and then non-Phyrexian creatures enter the battlefield tapped. That can be relevant for getting your combat damage through. It can be relevant for decks like playing against a deck like Teyam, which is rising in the meta, where your opponents, you know, are looking to... they have Tyvar on the field and they're looking to tap the creature that they're trying to reanimate for mana. Nope. Phyrexian Censor says no. So you love to see that. Let's see. Any more rule of law effects? Oh, here we go. High Noon. This one, I really, if you have access to white and red in your list, I think High Noon should be in it pretty much no matter what now. And he's playing Rule of Law as well. High Noon, one in a white, is from Outlaws of Thunder Junction. Each player can't cast more than one spell each turn. And then it has, more upside. For four in a red, you can sacrifice High Noon, lifting the gates, and then it deals 5 damage to any target. So I think the aspect of being able to lift the gates in your benefit is huge. I really like that. It does have a hefty price, but usually if you're ready to lift the gates, you're ready to go. You're ready to go for the win. So I like it a lot. I think High Noon's great. We also have Deafening Silence. This is, again, one of the more powerful one mana enchantments out there, but each player can't cast more than one non-creature spell each turn. So in a deck where Tyler is playing 36 creatures, it's pretty good, and it's pretty likely that he's going to cast multiple spells per turn and not really or truly be affected by Deafening Silence. All right. Rule of Law effects be damned. Let's keep moving forward. The next type of stacks effect, which I think is super valuable, and I think that we should be talking more about another Planeswalker, but we do have Spirit of the Labyrinth here, which is a one and a white. Each player can't draw more than one card each turn. So this is an effect that Wizards Ghost has banned cards, like Leovold, that says that opponents can't draw more than one card each turn. Now, this is not asymmetrical. This is something that limits your card draw as well. But I think it's worth it. I think that in a meta that is being punished by Rhystic Study and Mystic Remoras and all those things, Spirit of the Labyrinth is pretty darn great. Like I said, it's 2 mana, and it's a 3-1. So it has some more attack, has a small booty. It can definitely get sniped by a Bowmaster. But I do think it's a really powerful card. It's a really powerful effect. Now, let's talk about the Planeswalker that does this. Narset, Parter of Veils. This is where it becomes asymmetrical. Narset is 1/2 blue Planeswalker that says your opponents can't draw more than one card each turn. And then it has a minus effect that allows you to look at the top 4 cards and put a non-creature spell into your hand. So I love Narset. I'm just going to say it. I have a fantasy crush on Narset. But not being run here in Tyler's list. Narset is so good right now. And it should be the villain that everyone hates to see hit the battlefield. Because if there's one thing in the one way that the game has been geared towards, it has been geared towards drawing cards. It's why they don't want to bring Leovold back. They don't want players to feel oppressed by an effect that limits their card draw. But with the cards that are still legal, like, we should be punishing that card draw, since Rhystic Study is probably the most popular card in the format, the most dangerous card in the format, gives people the most information. Mystic Remoras, all these things, Esper Sentinels. You could say Esper Sentinel is a stacks piece in a way, right? Provides card advantage for your opponents just doing things. But I do think Narset could...
I mean, that's more of a Rhystic type card.
Yeah, yeah. Narset, huge in conjunction with Wheels, I think is where a lot of people fear it. I remember when Hull Breacher was around, and everyone feared that for the possibility of a wheel. But the game basically ends if you Narset into a wheel. Just because, you deprive your opponents of all their card advantage that they could possibly get. They discard their hand and they get one card in return. So it's pretty great. There are a bunch of other stacks effects. There is one type of effect I really want to get into before we draw this out too long. There's Opposition Agent here that is one of the more punishing effects. Doesn't allow you to search your library. Same with Avon Mind Sensor. is here as well. But the effect that I really want to get to is one that really attacks the meta. And it's a way that I think you can bust things up and truly, truly affect what your opponents are trying to do. Prevent them from winning games. And that is the effect that Drana and Limvala brings to the board. Flash, this is one of our favorite cards, I feel like. You and I collectively agree that this is amazing. Right? Mm-hmm. It's super good. It's 1/2 white and a black. This is from Aftermath. And I think that the color restriction is a bit of a hindrance because when you're playing white and black, I don't know if this is like the first card that pops in a lot of people's heads, but it's a Vampire Angel. It's one of those duos. But yeah, it's a 3/4 flying vigilance. Activated abilities of creatures your opponents control can't be activated. So again, asymmetrical effect. Drana and Limvala has all activated abilities of all creatures your opponents control. You may spend mana as though it were any color to activate those abilities. Wah, wah, wee, wah. This does so much. But the most important line, activated abilities of creatures your opponents control can't be activated. Now, there are a few other cards that have a very similar effect. Cursed Totem is one of them. This is a 2-mana colorless artifact that lives in decks like Urza that can tap it for mana, and other types of decks like even Elavir wants to play this because we're not activating abilities. We're just getting a trigger off the ability, right? The reason that it's important, the original Limvala also had this ability. Activate abilities of creatures your opponents control can't be activated in an asymmetrical effect. So if you are in white and not black, you can still have access to this type of effect. The meta is mostly activated abilities in the command zone. Thrasios, Kinnan, Sisse, Magda, Thrasios again, Glarb, Najeela, Derevi, Kenrith, Tayom, Marnius Kalgar has a activated ability. There are so many that just like it, like you just keep going down. You're like, oh, yep, that has one. Yep, that's an activated ability. So the thing is that, yeah, it's a ton of the top decks. When it comes to popularity and what you're most likely to see, activated abilities are going to be in the command zone. They're like, they're some of the most prevalent things that allow for mid-range decks to break through, Thrasios being the most popular. So we have to find a way to battle those types of effects. And I think the effect that Drana and Limvala brings is one of the more powerful ways to battle the meta at the moment, especially since it doesn't affect you, or it doesn't hurt you as bad. And now that we have the, like, basically the loss of Dockside, we've talked about this a couple times, but the reduction in clones throughout the format is mostly due to like the loss of upside and copying a Dockside. But the worst thing that can happen, and I've seen it happen before in a Dockside meta, this is in a Dockside meta, don't worry, but someone dropped a Drana and Limvala and then an opponent copied it. And then you're like, oh, okay, so no one can use effects. And you're like, yep, we're all screwed. It's like when Mother Machines hits the field, another type of stacks effect, which we'll also talk about. When a Mother of the Machines hits the battlefield and you copy it, it's like, oh, okay, so nobody gets ETBs. None at all. Anyway, Drana and Limvala not only steals the effects, but being able to turn everything off. This turns off dorks. This turns off, effects like even though Deathrite Shaman is a dork, it does turn off its ability to interact with the grave in a meaningful way. Let's see. Kinnan has the active ability to spin the wheel, go see what they can put onto the battlefield. And then, yeah, I think those are the most important things, right? So like a lot of combo machines revolve around these activated abilities. Like even Tyler's running Emile the Blessed has an activated ability. So I really do think that is probably the most powerful effect that you can, at this point in time, put on the battlefield to affect the meta in a meaningful way, is to just turn off all creatures.
Because it's just going to be relevant so often.
Yes. Now, the one thing that I will say, and this is a deck that I do think has room to grow and room to flourish in the meta, if you're wanting to play stacks, but the most popular deck that's out there right now is still Blue Farm, because it does not have an activated ability. It's always a triggered ability, and the creatures that get printed every set just make the deck so much better. Every single set makes Blue Farm, gives Blue Farm some new options, but the only real way to turn off that type of effect is, one, limiting its card draw via Spirit of the Labyrinth type effect, or two, just turn off all creatures with a card like Humility. Right? This is a card that is...
Shurikai seeing an uptick?
That's exactly the deck that I was going to bring up.
I think that's the classic Humility deck, right?
Yep, exactly. That's the deck I was going to bring up. It is... Humility is crazy. It's 2/2 white. All creatures lose all abilities and have base power and toughness 1/1. Now, in particular, there's one deck. Flash already said it, but Shurikai is the one deck that can take advantage of Humility to a great effect. Shurikai is 2 a white and a blue legendary artifact vehicle, but it can be your commander. It says, pay 1, tap, draw 2 cards, then discard a card. Create a 1/1 colorless pilot with creature can crew vehicles, though it were power were 2 greater. It has crew 8 and is an 8/8. So Shurikai is amazing. Like, it comes out and it can just, it can just sit there and generate card advantage over and over and over and over again. And it works through Humility, seeing as it is a vehicle, not a creature. So you still get all the effects of your commander without being affected by something as powerful and devastating as Humility. So that is like the other way that you can turn off Blue Farm and still generate quite a bit of advantage within the game if you commit to a blue-white strategy that I have seen be very effective. I have lost to Shurikai many a time. It's a really good deck. It's really, really good. It can play the best cards in the game. So the other types of effects that we can see in stacks that can affect the most, a majority of the meta, it's tough because, like, when it comes to ETB effects, because I said I wanted to talk about them, the Mother Machines type of effect, the Takatli Honor Guard type of effect, where ETBs just are restricted entirely. Torpor Orb.
Hushbringer,
thank you. Like, those type of effects are less powerful now that Dockside is gone, but are still very relevant. ETB effects keep getting stronger and stronger, and now players are trying to find new ways to continue to loop certain effects, like Peregrin Drake to untap your lands. That's what Emile the Blessed is in this deck list for, is to loop things like Peregrin Drake and Cloud of Fairies to for Guy's Cradle type effects. But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, those effects have fallen out of favor, I think, just due to the loss of the most powerful ETB effect in the game being lost. What else?
You just said it in that deck list, like, Emile is in there, and without Dockside, it's doing a slightly more complicated version of Docksiding.
Yes.
To get infinite mana.
Yeah. Something that's, it's just way harder to achieve, and it's, you can't even do Teemer Sabretooth. It has to be Emile now. Like, the Sabretooth is basically just dead. As we continue going down, there are a couple more effects. Blind Obedience, I really love. Now, this is an effect that has gotten to be a little bit less effective, but Tyler's really leaning into the turning artifacts off. So with Karn, the great creator, we also have Stony Silence and Collector Oof in this list. So obviously, turning artifacts off can be incredibly powerful. You turn off the One Ring, you turn off...
I, in this range, love Kataki War's Wage.
Yes, dude, that's a shout. Let's go. You never see Kataki anywhere anymore. It's such a good card.
It's a good card.
Yeah, for all of you who are unfamiliar with Kataki, War's Wage. No, that's not it. There we go. Kataki. Yeah, Kataki
War. Anyway, artifacts cost have an upkeep cost of one.
Yes. Yeah, for one and a white is a legendary creature spirit. So it has that Tabernacle at St. Pendril Vale type of effect, but for artifacts, where if you want to keep it around, you got to pay for it, and that's at the upkeep. So a lot of these rocks, a lot of mana rocks just fold to it, where it's like, oh, they just stay tapped. The mana can never be really truly relevant. So yeah, I think, damn, that's such a good shout. I love that card. But yeah, it basically kills One Ring unless people want to keep paying for it. So yeah, it's one of those things where you can turn off artifacts and it definitely does hinder strategies. In my experience, I do think it's very powerful. It also, if stacks pieces sit on the battlefield too long, what can happen is people will just navigate their way around them, right? And so that's one thing with Stony Silence is that
you can't just stacks without the intent of having a way to win.
Correct.
Like, the game's not gonna fall into your lap. It's just eventually, you know, the resource denial is irrelevant because they've had enough time to build resources.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, and like find answers and tutor for answers and all those things. So like, I will say that while it is great to get a Stony Silence down early, you got it. Like, you got to be able to push. You got to be able to push towards the win. You got to sort of become dramatic in your effort, right? Because while this will turn off certain strategies for opponents, you do have to just, like I said, you just got to keep pushing towards victory with this, because they will find a way.
Which is why Elevir is great, because Elevir is giving you a way to win while you're also staxing out the board.
Yep. And Stony Silence puts a plus, gives all of your creatures +1/+1, basically, with Elevir, which is massive, right? And then there are also effects like Blind Obedience, which has so that artifacts and creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. Love it, because it oftentimes one turn is all you need. Blind Obedience is one of the more annoying stacks pieces, and it's one of the OGs. It's amazing, but oftentimes now it gets overlooked. A lot of people don't look at Blind Obedience in the same light as they used to. I still see it as a way to win the game because it does have that upside.
Extort is also a relevant ability.
Yeah. Whenever you cast a spell, you can pay a white or a black, and then each opponent loses one life and you gain that much life. So in one of my favorite decks, Sakama, if you get your loop off, you start food chaining like crazy. Zakama allows you to filter the land mana into Blind Obedience and win the game. So it's another win con in decks that want to cast infinite spells to greater effect, right? So I think it's amazing. It's really great. The one thing is that the One Ring still gets protection. Oh, it still gives you protection. It's crazy. So, yeah, there are all these types of stacks pieces out there. Like, we talked ad nauseum about stacks pieces today, right? Deafening Silence.
We actually haven't mentioned ad nauseum in this podcast yet.
There's no way to Stacks ad nauseum. I've tried and tried and tried. There's no way. I mean, deafening silence is probably your best way to do it. But and
rule, but they're going to draw the removal for it.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, you just see them reveal cards and you go, oh, crap. There it goes. There goes my deafening silence. That's how they get rid of it. So, yeah, deafening silence, blind obedience, high noon, stony silence, rule of law effects, smothering tithe is just, you know, one of those taxing effects. Possibility storm, I think, is probably one of them. I still get a kick out of it because I think it's amazing. I think it's you win the game. Your opponents have to navigate through. You know what you're probably going to get out of it. Like your opponents just. I think it's one of the more unexpected pieces in the list. And I think it's a really cool Stacks piece at the moment. But yeah, you know, there's things like even Elishnorn, Grand Cenobite, which is like an effect that reduces your opponent's creature's power and toughness, boosts yours, can be devastating to their board state. And all these
and also moves you closer to a win because it's, you know, a lot of these Stacks effects are creature based and you're giving them all +2/+2.
Yeah.
After just clearing your opponent's board.
Right. Yeah, it is underappreciated, especially like I think Kenrith can take the best, like in most cases can use it to the greater effect just by being able to reanimate it for a lesser cost. Seven is oftentimes a little prohibitive, a little restrictive, but if you can discard it or, you know, get it into the grave in some way or another, Kenrith can use it to punish. So yeah, other effects like Aven Mind Sensor, Opposition Agent, all of these effects are present here just due to the fact that combat damage is still an effective way to win games. And I think that's what Kenrith does really well. Once you generate infinite mana with Kenrith, you're winning the game through combat damage most of the time. Like Thassa's Oracle does not exist in this list. The idea is to if you can put together the Emil Peregrine Drake, Emil Cloud of Fairies like strategy, or if you're able to generate enough mana and be able to consistently reanimate Peregrine Drake to that effect, right? Generate infinite mana that way. That was kind of the dockside loop before. But you can then use it to put an infinite amount of counters on your creatures and then use Kenrith's maybe most busted effect, which is for one red, all creatures gain trample and haste until end of turn. So combat damage is the way here. That's how I'm guessing Tyler wants to win the game. And I like it. I like it a lot. I think this deck definitely offers a lot of variety for Stacks that hinder the most popular strategies that exist in CDH at the moment. The only thing that Tyler is not running is an ETB stifler, like some sort of effect that stifle, like we talked about Hushbringer, Tikatli Honor Guard, and that type of effect. Those aren't existing here. Oftentimes I also find those to be frustrating because you can non-bow yourself. That is the greatest risk in running Stacks, is the fact that you are going to get in your own way. It takes a lot of testing to create a deck that doesn't get in your own way, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, the thing that we've hinted at though here is that there is every different flavor and variety of each of these types of effects, and that if you're a good enough deck builder, you can build your deck in a way where it's all asymmetrical, essentially, where, you know,
exactly. Yeah.
No non-bows in your Stacks.
Yeah. Yep. And like, usually even when I play like Collector Oof, I play a little bit heavier. I play like five artifacts because the chance of running into both of them is lesser, but Tyler's only on Sol Ring, Chrome Mox, and Lotus Petal. Not even messing with the One Ring. Not even playing with it or the idea of it. That's okay. That's okay. There is one land stacks piece that I was going to say that is a lot, like a lot of the times cut or not even really considered, but Glacial Chasm is also a stacks piece you can put in your deck in the land slot. It just prevents all damage that would be dealt to you. So Bowmaster Loops and combat damage, they aren't going to do anything. But you do have to sacrifice the land as a cumulative upkeep. Is it cumulative? I can't remember if it's cumulative. I think it's just each upkeep you got to sacrifice. Let's look it up, because I don't want to look like an idiot in front of our audience. It is cumulative upkeep, pay two life when it comes into play, sacrifice land. There you go. I would have looked like an idiot if I didn't.
Honestly, I knew that's what it was, but I assumed you had the card in front of you when you were saying sack land, and I thought I was wrong.
Well, now I have the card in front of me, and you were right. You were right. I was wrong. Our entire player base was, or our viewership was right, and I was wrong. It does have a really cool From the Vault print as well. Hasn't been printed in a long time. But anyway.
Yeah, it's from like Ice Age or Cold Snap, right?
Dude, you were right on with it. Yeah, it was Ice Age.
There we go.
Hell yeah. All right. Any stacks pieces I missed that you want?
I mean, for sure. As we were just saying, there is every flavor, every variety of stacks piece available to you. You just got to find the ones that lets you like dance between the raindrops and your build.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so perfectly put. If you are out there and you're listening to this podcast, which I don't know why you're not, why you wouldn't be.
I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you're definitely listening to this podcast.
Absolutely.
We can say that much.
There's a few things that we can definitely say if you are listening to this podcast. One, you love Dr. Pepper. This is the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. And you love Don Cheadle, because this is also the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering, Dr. Pepper, and Don Cheadle. I have news. Dr. Pepper news.
I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah. You ready for it?
Yeah.
The anticipation? I tried those Dr. Pepper peeps.
How were they?
Oh, they tasted just like Dr. Pepper. I was shocked. I was like, yo, what? It gives you that like...
The flavor is strong, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It like... Not only is it like strong Dr. Pepper flavor, but it gives you the same after effect as well. So like, you know how you take a sip of Dr. Pepper and you go, I'll have another. That's exactly the way
that is my classic experience with Dr. Pepper, is that I have another one of these bad boys.
Yeah. I just finished. Wait, it's gone already? Give me another one. You know, it's like, and then there was another product that I tried, Dr. Pepper flavored, and it was those Jelly Bellies. And it was the same.
Oh, which I have not had.
They're crazy. They're just powerful little nuggets of Dr. Pepper flavor. And they're the same deal. Like, I was so honestly shocked that the after effect was the same too. I was just like, danger, Will Robinson. I am going into a sugar coma. So it was a pleasant surprise. Thank you to my father, my lovely father, who sent me those in the mail for Easter. I finally cracked them. Finally taste them. They are, they're good. They're good stuff.
You know, do you think there's ever going to be a Lost in Space secret lair?
That is a great question. And I can actually see that happening. That'd be...
Yeah. A Danger Will Robinson is a reference to Lost in Space, for people who don't know.
Yes. Now, if you watched the most recent rendition of Lost in Space on Netflix, it did not have Don Cheadle in it. And it was
nope. Okay. Didn't have Matt LeBlanc.
Nope. Yes, the early 2000s film. but it did. It was okay as a series on Netflix. It was okay. But yeah, it was the robot did not run around saying, "Danger, Will Robinson, danger, Will Robinson." Just said it in a very.
That's what people are coming to see, though.
That's
it's, they want the robot saying, "Danger, Will Robinson."
All I want to see. I was waiting for it and it happened and I was like, oh, that was rather anticlimactic. So check out the show. If you have differing opinions, make sure to leave them below. If you also think that we missed any of your favorite stacks pieces you feel like that bust the meta, make sure to leave them in the comment section below. Look forward to seeing what you guys have to suggest out there. And yeah, thank you to Tyler for putting this list in the Discord server and busting the freaking meta, man. I'm looking forward to doing a little bit of deck building myself to, to continue to fight the evil that exists in the top eight here. God, I hate
it. It's like Ray Parker Jr. said in the Ghostbusters theme song, "Bustin' makes me feel good."
Oh, indeed. Indeed. All right. Once I have a Glarb hat in my hand, you guys will see him. Well, you guys will see him on camera on next week's episode. Look, God, I'm so stoked to get those in the mail. We are making progress on our next set of tokens. We also have tokens available in foil and non-foil. Got the non-foil ones right here in my hand. Reformatted, they're beautiful. If you've been watching this show, you've been seeing them cycle through in the bottom corner. But yeah, they're beautiful. And if you'd like to get your hands on some, join the Discord server and reach out to me, Menace. We'll get some in your hands. All right. This has been the Mock Stars Podcast, number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering, Dr. Pepper, and Don Cheadle. If you'd like to support the show, you can find us via YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also support us by finding us on your podcast platform of choice leaving us a 5-star review. This is how you know we're getting deep in the episode. I'm just tripping over all of my words. You can also support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead. For $3 a month, become an official Pepperhead. Have your name turned Dr. Pepper Red on the Discord server. You can also support us at the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier, like Maybe Anthony, Mono Greg, Jacob Hibbert, Tommy Cypher, K Mr. K, and Will Rule. Thank you all for your support. You can also support us at the 2-liter tier. Get 2 entries into each bi-weekly giveaway, significantly increasing your chances of winning. Or you can join the Mockstars Dr. Pepper Lounge. Like Ravenlift, holding down the fort, has definitely been appreciating the Dyson Bladeless fan we put in the lounge. So yeah, and get 3 free entries into each of the bi-weekly giveaways. Ravenlift has won a lot of giveaways. Is definitely worth it with the $40 hat and giveaway entries. Yeah, it's pretty great. All right, Flash. Any anecdotes, any last minute things you want to put out in the universe?
No, we talked about Don Cheadle. I quoted Ray Parker Jr. We did mention the Lost in Space movie with Matt LeBlanc. No, that's everything I had on my list.
Sweet. Yeah, all the notes in the show doc, we got them. We got them. All right. This is the Mock Stars Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We love you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
All right. If you've made it this far in the episode, you know what it is. This is our bi-weekly giveaway. And this week, we are giving away Magic the Gathering Odyssey, the first book in the Odyssey cycle. And we're giving away the Torment novel as well, which is book 2 in the Odyssey cycle. So 2 Magic the Gathering novels. I've had the pleasure of reading these in the backcountry of Alaska. I think they're wonderful. They're really great. The storytelling back in the day was different, I really, really stoked to have these find a new home. Someone who's going to appreciate them as much as I did. So let's go ahead and cycle this, shuffle it up 1, 2, and 3 times and spin the wheel to see who's going to win this week's bi-weekly giveaway. Who's it going to be? It's so close. It's definitely Jeremy. Congratulations, definitely Jeremy. You are the brand new owner of 2 Magic the Gathering novels, Odyssey and Torment. Some truly old school storytelling from the Magic the Gathering lore. You'll have to see if you can track down the third in the cycle and finish out the story. Anyway, this is your reminder as well that if you would like to support us, you can do so on Patreon. Get entries into each bi-weekly giveaway by joining us at the Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead tier and above. Get shout-outs every single week, every single episode. And if you want to double your chances of winning one of these giveaways, like definitely Jeremy, you can support us at the 2-liter tier for $10 a month. The ROI is insane. You can also join the Cherry or the Mockstars Dr. Pepper Lounge, like Ravenlift, and triple your chances, which has proven to be successful. So, yeah, thank you all for your support. Thank you all for participating. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode. We will catch you next time. This has been the Mockstars Podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering. Dr. Pepper, Don Cheadle, Space Jam 2, the Dyson Bladeless fan, and amongst other things. Peace!